Consecutive to what I told you in the last lecture concerning the impulse of life itself to work upon, operate with the physical universe, and the central meeting ground of this, which is, of course, biologic, we discover that a great many processes are possible which resolve the problem of an inability to think, an inability to act, a misorientation biologically, which is to say a psychosomatic illness, an inability to handle the physical universe, an inability to follow through various mental processes, an inability to look, inability to feel. All of these things stem out of the difficulties between life's efforts to amalgamate with the physical universe. This amalgamation, of course, is a biological effort. Now, let us trace the course of life itself in its effort to do this. And when I say life, I do not mean now a cell. I mean a static. The static has the potentiality of creating space, of creating energy, of creating objects, and of making itself operable in the physical universe. But it is not itself dependent for its existence or its knowingness or anything else upon the physical universe. It has all these things inherently. Basically, it knows all there is to know, basically. But it can become so concentrated, the attention of this unit, this static that we are referring to and which we call Thetan, can become so concentrated upon one datum or another datum that it sets aside a great deal of its knowingness in favor of a solidity. And there we get identification, a person's ability to contact space and what he suffers from in terms of identification are related. Differentiation is essentially something which permits space to interpose amongst data. And identification is something which makes all data in the same space. Now we get an enforced problem here where an individual, in an effort to assemble all data, to communicate with all data, eventually fixate us upon a few data and, you might say, compresses those things into a unit space. This is an identification. This is manifested in an individual by stupidity, just like that. I mean, there's no more complexity to it than that. An individual becomes more and more, you might say, stupid the more he identifies. The better he can differentiate, the more brilliant he becomes. You can see how this is. An individual believes that a stove and a horse are the same thing. Well, that would merely be consequent of the datum of stove and datum of horse occupying the same space. Well, that's not logical to you, and it's not logical to me. Actually, a great deal of data would have to intervene between a stove and a horse before you could get the two connected. You can connect these two by a gradient scale of data. You can say a horse is quite warm. He is actually a biological engine. He is an engine which operates at, I don't know what the normal temperature of a horse is, but we will just call it 98.6. And he operates on oxygen and carbon. In the Army, they call them hay burners. So you see, actually, the Army could be said to, and make a joke out of it by just jumping a few intervening data, and we say, actually, the Army has long recognized the relationship of a stove to a horse since they call them hay burners. Now, you've got a relationship. What have you done here? You have put the data on a gradient scale, more and more space, you might say, between a stove and a horse. Now, an individual begins to skip these intervening data. And he gets to a point, finally, where all of these data are the same data, and they're all jammed into one space, you might say, and they're all mixed up with energy and pounded down. And at this point, he is unable to pull these data apart. He associates, in other words, illogical things. He associates stoves and horses. He will associate such a thing as all women. Women are all occupying the same space, as far as he's concerned. Maybe this space was originally occupied by mother. And mother was such a terror that he eventually says anything that even vaguely resembles mother is bad. Then anything which resembles women
is bad, and therefore all women are bad, and now his total conviction is all women are bad, and any time he looks at a woman, no matter what she's trying to do for him, his concept of her action is bad. You know, she tries to give him a drink of water when he's dying of thirst. This is a bad action. You see people doing this in the society. You try to patch up somebody or make somebody a little happy or something of the sort, and they turn on you and unsheathe their fingernails. Well, they're operating on some kind of a super identification of this character. They say, all doctors are bad. All doctors are bad. They've been hurt too many times by doctors or something of the sort. And you are practicing some healing art, and therefore you're bad. And this would be totally irrational to you, wouldn't it? Yet it would seem very, very logical. It would be a great certainty to this individual. Now, there are two kinds of certainty involved here. One is the certainty that one gets simply by knowing. It has nothing to do with space or impacts. Space, energy, matter. And the other certainty is that which has to do with impacts. You can hammer and pound a fellow a long time on one datum, and he will eventually conclude that he's certain of that datum. This is really the effort of modern education, or ancient education. They put somebody in a closed room, which is a very small room, and then they pound datum at them and say they have to be very, very sure of this data. Well, 100 years ago, they made very sure that they educated them because they took a rod to them. And if a fellow was unwilling to admit that 1 plus 1 equaled 2, they would beat him until he did admit it. And thus you get the concatenation of data, which sum up into things like arithmetic and so forth. Basically, these things are quite logical. But a school puts a great deal of attention upon very specific and specialized data in this field. Now, they have problems, however. One of their students is very bright. He grasps arithmetic very easily. And another student is quite dull and seems utterly incapable of grasping arithmetic. The second student could be said to be pounded too hard. He's been pounded too hard. He has too many things identified. He can't pull his thoughts apart anymore. His thoughts are all in a ball, you might say. And when you say to him, that is, it can be just on a ball on the subject of mathematics, you see. Nothing but mathematics. Mathematics alone are this identification. He knew somebody who was quite smart at arithmetic, which person hated him. And he hated that person, and this person beat him. Let's say his father was an accountant. And he had a great deal of trouble with his father, and so forth. Well, we get to a point where the fact that father handles arithmetic is sufficient to cause all arithmetic to become first associated with father, and then totally identified with father. And this total identification would bring about a great stupidity. Trying to learn arithmetic would be like being beaten or ridiculed by father. There we have an example, a practical example in life of what specifically happens to an individual. He identifies more and more and more things with the physical universe, with objects, more and more things. And eventually, he gets to a point where he can no longer differentiate amongst objects, data, facts, people, and that he's had a bad experience with a small child is enough then to cause him to be a little bit uncomfortable in the vicinity of small children. And then as he has worse and worse experiences, he's already elected, you see, to have bad experiences with small children. The next thing you know, why, all small children bring him actual physical pain. Just the sight of a small child is enough to cause him pain. Physical pain, actually. Let's say, as a small child, he was very badly hurt. This is a dangerous age. Therefore, small children have a tendency to re-stimulate this period of his life. Well, and thus, you get differentiation decaying, really, into too close an association, and that decaying into a very close identification. And this is the same pattern as the descending of the static life, which is not yet connected with the universe, to a total connection with the physical universe. And the meeting ground of that total connection is, of course, this biological pattern. Now, the messed universe, which is to say matter, energy, space, and time, messed universe has a curve or cycle of action. That cycle of action is a very simple one. It begins with creation, goes through persistence, and progresses into and ends with decay or destruction. Creation, survival, destruction. That is the curve. It starts with creation, goes through survival, and goes down into destruction. This is the time span, you might say, of the individual, of a planet, of a flower, of anything. That is the pattern operation of the universe. Create, survive, destroy. Now, that curve should demonstrate to us a considerable amount of data right there. Actually, it's a very, very old curve. Stated differently, we discover this curve in the Vedic hymns. One of the earliest of the Vedic hymns says that things are born, they grow, they persist for a while, they decay, and they die. And that is straight out of the Vedic hymns, and those things are probably in excess of 8,000 years old. All right? So this is not a new datum, but let's codify it, and let's look at it, and let's see if that datum all by itself is of any great use to us. Well, it certainly is, because we have in an individual his impulses. And what are the impulses of an individual? They are divided up into three categories: the impulse to create, the impulse to survive or persist, and the impulse to destroy, which turn over eventually into the impulse to be created, the impulse to be made to survive, and the impulse to be destroyed. And here, when we have walked into this last one, we have walked into the death wish of Schopenhauer. Here we have, actually, eventually, a death wish. Now, an individual who progresses along this curve discovers this. At the point of creation, a great many things are possible. For instance, it can be said even of a group that its highest ethic level and its highest level of ability is at the moment of its formation. This is quite true. In an individual, if you start running the cycle of any action that he has been through, which was disastrous, we discover that his view of the image pictures which he has of this action are three-dimensional at the start of the incident and walk on through to being a little bit tighter at the top of the curve, which is survive, and finally wind up at the end of the curve being totally invisible or black. They've gone through a process of being three-dimensional, then more or less two-dimensional, and finally over to a point of non-existent. This is just the image pictures, the recordings he's taken of the incident. We find this curve traced all through life. Now, we find this static over here, the thetan, is totally capable of creation and destruction. And the odd part of it is, his survival is natively infinite. This whole curve is inherent in the individual. That is to say, that life unit known as the thetan, which is an energy space production unit. All three points on the curve are inherent in the thetan. Now, what happens to him then? Well, he begins to concentrate upon create. He matches himself up and begins to depend upon the time of the messed universe, and so drifts from create to a feeling he has to persist, to a feeling that he is destroyed. And he goes through that curve. And he starts to mirror this in various ways, just as himself, and then finally, biologically, in association with bodies, which are, of course, merely life forms amalgamated with the physical universe, which are undergoing this cycle of action. And when he falls beyond the point of bodies, there's nothing left. He can't even have a biological expression, which, of course, makes practically all communication impossible. Now, what practical use is there of this? If these things are all inherent with the individual, why, what could we do then to change the individual? Well, there's two things to change here. Actually, there's three things to change. You could change the physical universe. That is the study of physics. You could change the biological form of things. That's another study. And the other change that you could make would be the change of the life unit itself. Well, a life unit itself simply changes by changing its mind. That's very simple. But when it begins to believe that it is, and when it is totally concentrated upon this biological line and has dedicated itself to the formations of cells and other such things, it becomes more difficult to change because it thinks the biological line itself has to be changed before it can change. Actually, all it has to do to change is change its mind. It is totally composed, you might say, of postulates, which is to say statements that it makes, conclusions. And the biological line is utterly dependent upon a great many conclusions from a great many sources. And the physical universe is the most neatly arranged set of agreements that you could possibly rack up. They are very interestingly precise. You could say those are the postulates of God. And they consist of Ohm's law, Newton's three laws of motion, the various nuclear laws. All of these things are, of course, part and parcel of the physical universe. But are they necessarily a part of this static called life? No. It would be capable of making a great many such laws and making them, putting them into effect. It's capable, actually, of making a whole universe of its own. But when it's moved all the way across to the physical universe, then all it is doing is agreeing 100% with the agreements which it already found on the ground. At that time, all the determinism there is, so far as option and choice of the individual is concerned, all the determinism there is other determinism, the determinism of the physical universe. On the biological line, the only real difficulty the individual has is that a great many things on the biological line are otherwise determined. So we have another scale. Over here, the Thetan is best off when he is self-determined. You know, he's making his own laws. And he is only mediumly well off when he is part of the biological line, whereby he is using some of his own determinism, but a great deal of other determinism for his postulates. And he is in terrible shape when he's gotten over to the physical universe side, where he is totally dependent only upon other postulates, and he makes none of his own. There is the scale of other determinism and self-determinism. Starts out with self-determinism, then a little bit of other determinism enters in, and as it goes on down the line, we have more and more other determinism, less and less self-determinism, and we get a picture whereby the physical universe represents total other determinism, and where the Thetan represents total self-determinism in his native state before he became fixated upon other postulates than his own. Therefore, we can say that the deterioration of the individual is the deterioration of his own determinism. Well, this would have to do with another thing. It would be deterioration of his knowingness. He would become less and less certain of his own rightness and more certain of other rightnesses. And so he would become convinced at length that only the physical universe was right and that he himself had no right to be right. Now, a great many operations enter into this. But an individual who is very bad off cannot be made to tell a lie. If he's terribly bad off, he cannot tell a lie about something that's happened in the past. He just can't lie, that's all. He's terrified of lies. Well, in other words, he's terrified of making a postulate of his own. We take a small child, look at this child. The child's having an interesting time. He can put battleships in the front yard and in the ceiling, and his pocket's full of jewels and diamonds. He's perfectly happy about it. And we look over here at the same child when he has become aged and antique and 16, and we find out that he has begun to be terrified of saying something is different in the past than was. He says, that is a church, and by golly, it's a church. He said, that is a car. It's a car. There's nothing wrong with his calling it anything, so long as he knows he's calling it something different than what other people call it. All we have here is an ability, which is deteriorating, an ability to know what other people know and what he knows, too. Well, eventually gets down to a point of he knows only what other people know, and he doesn't know what he knows. So we get the deterioration of the individual. Well, how to resolve this problem? Is there a fast method of resolution? Yes, there certainly is. Let's take a look at create. We'll discover as we process, treat individuals, that they are most concerned, really, about their inability to create. They're most concerned about this. They get very upset. You find some case that can see nothing but blackness, cannot even see his own image pictures anymore. His main concern is the fact that once upon a time he could paint. Once he could write, once he could get ideas in general, he could create. And we find that his greatest sorrow will be located on the basis he can no longer do this. What's happened to him? He has begun to depend for the C upon the biological line, that is to say, for the create end of this cycle of action upon the biological line. The biological line now is carrying the burden of create. And how is that expressed? It's expressed sexually. We have an individual who is having difficulty with creating his own thoughts and so forth, having difficulty with space, having difficulty with differentiation. In other words, the early part of the curve is gone. We find that individual has become dependent upon a system of creation known as sex. He has become very upset where and when he cannot procreate. He has become sold, you might say, upon this set of postulates known as biology. He has to depend upon various other factors, such as the weather, temperature, water, other things have to enter in so that he can create. And what he creates is now very limited. And that is to say, he creates another cell. He creates another life form. Cytology says this unending stream of protoplasm, which goes through time. Well, that is the most succinct statement that can be made, really, on description of sex. It is an unending stream of protoplasm that goes through time. But it's, of course, adventurous to call it unending, because the destruction of the air envelope of this planet by some mad hatter who has completely bought an atomic postulate and has forgotten that life itself can make postulates would destroy every life form on this planet and would certainly end the unending line of protoplasm. Well, this is an anxiety. This total dependence upon the messed universe in order to create brings about this anxiety. When is somebody going to come along with an atom bomb and knock the whole thing off? An individual says, look, I can go along. I can carry on in life because I can cause bodies to create new forms, and I can make these new forms. And he becomes fixated on this, and all of a sudden somebody says, well, let's destroy everything. And that will end your unending line of protoplasm in this area. Let's destroy everything. That, of course, is what your nuclear physicist is saying today, aided and abetted by the military form of government, which most countries now have. Now, they, of course, are playing the other end of the scale. The cycle of action has come over to a point of where they think in terms of destruction. You say, well, now look, you could take an atomic pile and you could run automobiles and you could do all sorts of things with it. You could run factories. Look, you could create enough water even to make California unthirsty. And just with an atomic pile, there's nothing to that. And we find that none of this was possible to people who studied the physical universe until a war came along and appropriated for the project of the atom bomb $3 billion and Lord knows how many billions since. Nobody has ever appropriated 5 cents to find out whether or not an atomic pile could distill water. But kill men, yes. So you see, the depravity which has set in over here when you get total agreement with the physical universe. You could say that this is a war going on between an effort on the part of the physical universe to destroy all life within it and an effort on the part of life to master and use the physical universe. And this war has its two extremes. The dramatization of the physical universe is death. Now, your create, survive, destroy curve is very useful to you in processing since you will find your preclear located somewhere on it. Of course, you see, none of the people that you're really in communication with as preclears are yet totally in the biological span. They are closer to the static than they are to the biological span. The biological span is being carried on by, evidently, the same mechanism, which has deteriorated down to a point where it can only make cells. And it really makes the cells. The people that you address and that you can still get in communication with are actually energy space production units, which are simply using this biological line. This is very easily tested. You say to somebody who is not having very much trouble with this biological line, you say, be 3 feet back of your head, and of course, bing, he is. No trouble. He said, what do you know? I am a thought production unit. I am not a body. This comes as a great surprise to him. What you've done is interrupt his dwindling spiral, where he was just merging right on down to the biological line. He would finally wind up as doing nothing but make more cells, make more bodies. How do you combine the protoplasmic acids in order to do this, in order to do that? A terribly complex mechanism, by the way, making a cell, making a body. But he has come down to a point where he would simply be part of this impulse.
And you've interrupted that. You said, be 3 feet back of your head. And he says to himself, he can still think. He still has some fluidity. He is not totally identified yet. And he says, what do you know? I am a thought production unit. And you can go on and drill him with various drills, which are very advanced in procedures. And we find that this individual is capable of making space. We find out he's capable of creating energy. We find out that he can do a great number of things. And principally, that his knowingness has been well restored. But most people have a little bit of difficulty. They don't snap out of their heads with complete knowingness. They have to be coaxed into that knowingness. They're certain they're out of their heads, but they don't quite know what they're doing. Well, a few drills put them up into a condition whereby they can perform too. They can see the physical universe just as well out of their heads as in it. And the individual who just has to be exteriorized and coaxed a little bit is not terribly difficult. Therefore, the easy case that just you say, be 3 feet back of your head, and he says, what do you know? I'm me, and I know, and so forth. You say, be 3 feet back of your head, and he says, yes, I'm here, all right, but boy, this is certainly puzzling. And you have to drill them. Well, those people comprise about 50% of the people that you would process as an auditor. Now, what about the remaining 50%? These people don't jump 3 feet back of their head. Well, there's a similarity there between this case level and the inability to create. There's a similarity there to a position on the curve. These people are trying so hard to survive that they have practically merged with the biological line. They think of themselves as a body. They think of themselves as totally incapable of doing anything but forwarding this biological line. In other words, they come right in towards survive. And survive, in essence, is a persistence. And boy, do their ideas, what those ideas they have, do they persist? They cannot change their ideas at will. Therefore, therapy becomes rather difficult with them. Their persistence is itself the thing which is debarring their therapy, because it's what they're persisting on. They're persisting on the biological line, which, of course, is rigged to do what? To make more biological line. You see, biological line makes more biological line, makes more biological line, which means repair the body and depend upon sex, the unending stream of protoplasm, to make new biological lines. So we find our people, as we process them, further and further along on this curve of create through survive to destroy. And when we get well past survive, we get to an individual who can think in no terms but suicide. He tries to kill himself and those around him. He would not even dream of getting, you might say, out of the body. All he can think of being in the body and destroying things. He has bought the physical universe. Well, we try to process this individual. We normally find him in sanitariums and so forth because he's no longer able to promote the biological line. And we find his anxiety on the subject of sex very, very great. But it's very destructive. It's not a type of sexual activity that would lead to an unending stream of protoplasm. Quite on the contrary, it would be a type of sexual activity which said the unending stream of protoplasm must now end, which is to say homosexuality, other misconducts. And we'd find him over on the physical universe side of the ledger over here. And he would be very involved with rocks and solid masses of various things. He's really left the biological line.